TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Jim Hightower, if the gods had meant us to vote, they would have given us candidates. Even though this is the title of his most recent book, it is a fitting headline for the talk you are about to hear. They call Jim Hightower a visionary with a horse sense, a fearless populist who will take on the rich and powerful. The former Texas Agriculture Commissioner turned author, radio commentator, and very well-loved public speaker. Hightower spoke in September 2000 at a benefit for the San Francisco Green Party and their California candidate for senator, Medea Benjamin. The audience at Mission High School in San Francisco was alive with warm anticipation to hear a man who is considered one of the most thought-provoking and funny speakers of our time. Here is Jim Hightower.
I am the one who should be applauding you for being out here tonight, fighting for America's democracy to take power back. What a terrific opportunity we have. Medea Benjamin and I are here to salute the work that you are doing, because it's the grassroots people who are going to make the difference, and that is the only thing that's ever made the difference in our society, is when ordinary people reach out in our limited ways, in our important ways, in our truly heroic ways, to take power back in this country. Perfect joy for me to join this room full of rowdy and raucous Green Party champions, all around agitators for a new American democracy, because that's what we're trying to establish, really, is a new democracy that's based on the old democracy. Citizens like you who care enough to say no to the choice of Tweedly Dumb and Tweedly Dumber. We've had enough of that. And to say yes to giving our great American democracy a jump start with the Ralph Naders and the Medea Benjamins of our society. Well, I come to you as somebody who's been a proud Democrat, elected as such in the state of Texas. People back there are still laughing about it. You didn't get a virgin when you drew me here tonight. I've been in politics, been in Texas politics, been elected in states, Texas politics, but I now look up to my national party and I find that they've taken off the old Sears Roebuck work boots and strapped on the same Gucci's and Poochies that the Republicans are strutting around in. And I say what most people say: if the Democratic Party is not going to stand for us, why the hell should we stand for it? Got a section in my latest book, If the Gods Had Meant Us to Vote, They Would Have Given Us Candace. In there, you get a page in which you get to express your full theology and philosophy in a single page and a quote. And I chose several trees died to make this possible, but I chose a quote. It's actually in an old cowboy saying out of West Texas, say, speak the truth, but ride a fast horse. Well, I'm here to speak the truth with you tonight about something that I find rather alarming, something I find fairly critical in our society, in fact, dangerous for our society, and that is the hijacking of your and my democracy. And by democracy, I'm talking about our right to be a self-governing people, the right of we the people to actually be in charge of the public policy decisions that affect our full community. Yet without a peep of protest from the Democratic or Republican parties, with practically no coverage by the establishment media, we the people largely have been stripped of our real participation in power. Cicero, 2,000 years ago, said freedom is participation in power. That's an interesting phrase. Think about that. It's participation in power. Freedom is not the right to vote. Freedom is the right to participate in power. We have the right to vote. But in a cabal of ignorance and arrogance between Washington and Wall Street, and you can make your own decision about which is the ignorant and which is the arrogant. The political and the moneyed elites in our country have steadily and stealthily usurped our people's democracy, our right to participate in power. You can check any poll, go out to any chat and chew cafe in America, talk to the American people, and ask them these questions. Do the people in power care what people like you think? Does Congress act in the public's interest, or does it do what the lobbyists and the campaign contributors want? Does your voice really matter in America today? These are the fundamental questions. And depending on which poll you check or which chat and chew you go into, about 85% of Americans answer no to all of these questions. Why is that? Because it's true. Demonstrable in their daily lives. Isn't that a stunning thing in our society? We don't count. Our voice doesn't matter. Lobbyists decide what members of Congress do. People in power don't even care what we think. I referred to you earlier as agitators. That's become a pejorative in our society today, right? Agitators. Our workers were perfectly happy in this factory until those outside agitators came in. Poor people didn't mind living up against that toxic waste dump until the outside agitators came in. Well, hogwash and horse hockey to all that. Agitation is what America's all about. Where it wasn't. Were it not for agitators, we'd all be sitting here tonight wearing white powdered wigs singing God Hail the Queen. Agitators created America. They created the possibility of democracy. They did not create democracy, however. The first presidential election, who was allowed to vote? You got it. If you were a woman, you couldn't vote. You were chattel. You were African American, you were slave. You were Native American, you were a heathen. If you were without property, you were riffraff. You couldn't vote. Only 4% of the American people were eligible to vote in the first presidential election. We don't come here to celebrate the Declaration of Independence. We don't come here to celebrate the founders. We come here to celebrate those in the intervening 225 years, people just like you and me, who have gathered to put our lives and our heads and our bodies, and indeed to fight and bleed and die in order to democratize those documents, to extend the possibility of democracy so that more people can participate in power. Sojourner Truth and Frederick Douglass, the populists and the wobblies, the abolitionists and suffragists, Martin Luther King Jr., Cesar Chavez, now it's our time to be the agitators again. Not easy to make this fight. You get ridiculed. You get dissed by the establishment media. You get assaulted by the political powers that be. Kind of gets to be unpopular. Get to feeling like that guy that B.B. King sings about when he says, nobody likes you but your mama, and she might be jiving you too. But it is an essential fight. An old, age-old fight that we're involved in. George Bernard Shaw, about 100 years ago, said, progress doesn't come by merely standing on guard, but by attacking and getting well hammered yourself. We're in a fight in the very best of American traditions. A fight to implement the founding values of our nation. Values that still ring clear tonight. What are those values? What do we believe in as a people? It's not a matter of a dollar an hour increase in a wage. It's not a matter of another nickel a bushel of wheat. It's not a matter of another regulation, another law. We're fighting for something that's fundamental. What are those values? At least they come down to three things, it seems to me. Economic fairness. American people believe in economic fairness. Social justice. That's within the heart of every American. Equal opportunity for all people. Those are the values. All of our fights, whether it's for a living wage, whether it's for community schools, whether it's for environmental sanity, whether it's for environmental justice, whatever the battle is, it comes down to those values of fairness and justice and opportunity for all. Benjamin Franklin, some years ago, said the destiny of America is not power, but light. Light. What light was he talking about? Wasn't that little key he ran up on the kite string? The light he was talking about were those values of fairness, justice, equal opportunity. The problem is, in Washington and in our state capitals, we got too few politicians willing even to talk about these values anymore, much less attempting to implement any of them. Of course, I think our problem is we got too many 5-watt bulbs sitting in 100-watt sockets in those offices. And that's why we're gathered here, to try to see if we can't make a difference. The powers that be in our country are attempting something radical and dangerous. They're attempting to separate themselves from the rest of us. The privileged few would like to separate themselves from the very powerful and necessary notion that we're all in this together. That is the social glue that holds this country of amazingly diverse people together. The notion of the common good. And that's been abandoned. Here we are in a public high school. And they said, we don't need a public high school. We could have vouchers and go to private academies. George W. Bush has been there. Al Gore has been there. They say, we don't need public highways. We've got Lexus lanes where we can go down. And they go to the public stadiums, but they have skyboxes that are paid for by you and me. They want to separate themselves from the common good and displace that notion that binds us together as a society with a new ethic of greed that says, I got mine, you get yours, never give a sucker an even break, caveat emptor, I'm rich and you're not, adios, chump. Now, I want to be clear here at the top. I'm not chastising people who have money. Nothing wrong with having money in our society. I'm with Mark Twain on that, actually. Mark Twain once said, I'm opposed to millionaires, but it would be dangerous to offer me the position. Some say that money is the root of all evil, but that's not what the Bible says. The Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil. And that's what's gone wrong in our society. Those who love money are having an orgy today. It's not money we oppose, it's greed that we oppose. You want greed? Politicians and all the media today chirp endlessly about the unprecedented, unbounded economic boom in America. Money magazine about 6 months ago had a cover article that said, everybody's getting rich. Hello. In my book, I've got a section called, If These Are Good Times, Why Aren't I Having One? Eight out of ten Americans today in this period of unprecedented prosperity, 80% of us have seen our incomes go flat or go down. Isn't that interesting? America's prosperous, but Americans are not. 80% seen their incomes go flat or go down. Why isn't that in the presidential debate today? Average wages today and real buying power beneath what they were when Richard Nixon was president of the United States. Hello. Yes, more money is being generated than ever before, but it's all going to the top. We'll have a show of hands here tonight. I don't want anybody to be embarrassed, but how many of you made $287,000 last year? That's a pretty good piece of change, isn't it? Less than 1% of the American people made that amount of money. One who did is Michael Eisner. He's chief mouseketeer down here at Disney, Inc. Michael Eisner made $287,000, but not for a year, not for a month's work, not for a week's work, not for a day's work. That's what he made an hour. Plus a car. Again, we're not criticizing money, but at the same time, Michael Eisner has been reaching out here to take back the health care benefits of the minimum wage workers that he dresses up as Pluto and Goofy and all the gang down at Disneyland and Disney World. It's disparity that we're talking about. It's greed that we're talking about. Some of these guys getting so rich they could afford to air condition hell, and from the way they're acting, they better be setting some money aside for that project, I think. Don't you? You want greed? There's another example of it taking place in Washington, D.C., even as we sit here 3,300 miles away tonight. Example of greed between the Democrats and the Republicans fighting over the minimum wage bill in Washington. Some people say there's not a dime's worth of difference between the two parties. But I'm here tonight to do the calculation for you. That is not true. The Republicans have suddenly surged forward and said, yes, we're ready to raise the minimum wage by a buck an hour. That would raise it to $6.15 an hour, $12,000 a year. That's a poverty wage if you work full time. But they say we need to phase this in over 3 years. 33 and a third cents a year. The Democrats say that won't do, by God. We're for the working families of America. We want a dollar increase in the minimum wage, but we want it phased in over 2 years' time. 50 cents a year. So there you have it. 17 cents worth of difference between the two parties. I need to be fair, though. Dennis Hastert, Speaker of the House of Representatives, Republican, Illinois, Dennis the Menace, we call him. Dennis was suddenly up on his hind legs here in the Congress of the United States just recently, in which he gave an impassioned speech. It was terribly touching. He said, these people have families. They have kids to put through college. They have the right to a decent life. Who was he talking about? Was it the minimum wage workers? No. It was members of Congress. He was talking about raising the pay of the members of Congress of the United States. And he got an agreement from the Democratic leadership, Dick Gephardt, that they would raise the pay of the members of Congress, which they did last year and again this year, but that they would not talk about it in the congressional elections. They would not allow this to be used by their candidates for congressional elections because they said, quote, it's unpopular with the people. We shouldn't talk about it. You want greed? Follow the toxic fumes. Pollution tends to be a class issue. If it spews, burbles, oozes, blasts, emits, gushes, radiates, or otherwise does something unpleasant or actually deadly, chances are it's located in a working class, a minority, a rural, a low-income neighborhood, or some combination thereof. If you're poor, your chances of living next door to Mr. Toxic are quite good. If you're rich, your chances are nil. They don't have a lot of waste dumps on Knob Hill. In fact, I've often thought we could solve the pollution problems of this country. This needs to be a piece of the platform of our Green Party candidates. I'm sure it is. Not by having a whole shelf full of regulations and laws that the EPA has, but by one simple rule. It would say this: any corporation that wants to establish a polluting facility, a toxic waste dump or whatever, perfectly able to do so, we give you license to do it, as long as the chief executive, the board of directors, and their families live within 100 yards of that facility. Don't you believe they'd clean it up? But the most fundamental greed is not about any of our particular issue concerns, constituency concerns about labor, family farmers, pure food, human rights, discrimination, privacy, the outrageous drug war ravaging America. But rather, it's over the central issue of democracy itself, the issue that was raised up here in Seattle last year. In the Seattle Tea Party, when the WTO gathered to have its little private session and 50,000 uninvited guests showed up. And the question that was raised there, everybody was there. There were the Teamsters and Turtles that are quite famous now. There were the animal rights activists, the human rights activists. There was labor, there was farmers, there were everybody who was there. But they were not merely there for their own particular issue. They were there for this fundamental question: who the hell's going to be in charge in America? Is it going to be the moneyed elite or we the people? Got a section in this book: Plutocracy is not government by a far-off planet. It's government by the wealthy few, making a mockery of our democracy. And now here we come. Election 2000, a space odyssey. So surreal that even Stanley Kubrick could not have imagined it. This election, because it's not in touch with the real world in which real folks exist. Now the experts are predicting a stunningly low turnout. We're looking at possibly lower than 1996. In fact, more Americans will have gone bowling in the year 2000 than will have voted in the November 7th election. Not because people don't care. I can tell you that people care desperately. I talk to them every day on the radio. I travel America, visiting with folks just like you. People want to have a voice, and they want their voice to count. People are yearning for a new politics that reaches out, involves them, and in fact is them. The two-party duopoly has failed the majority of America's people. Time for a new American revolution. That's why we're gathered here tonight, to try to put something together that'll build a new politics for all of us. Instead, we get this surreal election. How surreal is it? So surreal that Dan Quayle was actually a contender for a while. But of course, the most surreal thing about this election is that Dan Bo Quayle is not the most surreal thing about this election. The most surreal thing is that it's over. The election's over. Before you go down on November 7th to cast a vote, before the good people of Iowa were allowed in the first vote in our nation, January of the year 2000, to cast a vote, the election is over. The election was held last year. That's when Al Gore and George W. Bush and John McCain and Bill Bradley went dragging their silk sacks through the corridors of power on Wall Street and out to the Silicon Valley and into the Martha Stewart-designed living rooms in between, sacking up the tens of millions of dollars that they now have to run for president this year. And in sacking up those tens of millions of dollars, they agreed to the fundamental economic agenda of the corporate and investor elites that put that money up. Those people, who were they? Who voted in 1999? 1/20 of 1% of the American people. 1/20 of 1% of the American people put all of the money up. All of it. For George Bush, Al Gore, John McCain, and Bill Bradley, and the rest of them. That's all. 1/20 of 1%. That leaves a few of us out, doesn't it? 99.whatever% of the American people are left out of that equation. And in putting that money up, they chose our choices for us in the year 2000. This is the system that now gives us a choice of Al Gore and George Bush, Bud Light and Miller Light. Manuel Gonzalez says, straightforward, "I won't vote. Doesn't count anyway. The politicians do what they like. It's not a people's country. It's a money country." Now, I think Manuel Gonzalez is wrong. I think he's got to vote. I think all of us have got to vote. Don't let them scare you out of the voting booth. There's somebody to vote for in there, including Ralph Nader and Medea Benjamin, and on down the ballot. You can find somebody to be for. Our task is to climb that wall of economic and political exclusion and do what the great majority of Americans want. Not just us here in this high school and mission district of San Francisco, but all across this country. People want the same thing that we want. We want our country back. We want it back from the greed heads and boneheads, back from the speculators and spoilers, the bankers and the bosses, the big shots and the bastards who are running roughshod over all of us. And the good news is the people are fighting already to take it back, and more often than not that they are winning. The living wage campaign that's racing across America. The media doesn't report it, but it's there. 40 cities have already passed that across America. The clean election campaigns in America that takes the corrupt money out of politics. Massachusetts, Vermont, Maine, and Arizona already have passed it. Missouri has it as well. Every place that puts this on the ballot wins. And not only does it mean do we take the corrupt money out of politics by public financing of our election, but it means that an ordinary citizen can run for office again, that a school teacher, a plumber, a dirt farmer, a taxi cab driver has access to the same pool of money that the incumbent does. It'll change politics because it means that we, the people, can get back in and not just have the ability to vote, but have the ability to participate in power again. The Clean Election Initiative, passing all across the country, it is passing. The people of this country are ready for exactly what it is that you want. We don't have to create a progressive movement. It's out there. Every place that's got a zip code has got somebody like you who's fighting, got some group of people who are fighting, got some organization, got some coalition that's banding together to do what it is we've got to do, which is to take America back. I'll leave you with this thought. It's from a moving company in my town of Austin, Texas. This moving company has an advertising slogan that I have usurped. In fact, they have it in the Yellow Pages. Their slogan is, "If we can get it loose, we can move it." That's all we're talking about. Get it loose for the people. They'll move it for themselves. Thank you very much.
That was Jim Hightower, former Texas Agriculture Commissioner turned author and radio commentator. He wrote, among other books, "There is Nothing in the Middle of the Road but Yellow Stripes and Dead Armadillos." He spoke in September 2000 at a benefit for the San Francisco Green Party and their California candidate for senator, Medea Benjamin. To find out more about Hightower's radio programs, commentaries, newsletters, and books, check out his website at www.jimhightower.com. That's jimhightower.com. You heard a 29-minute excerpt of a 50-minute speech. You can get the complete talk for $12 from TUC Radio. For a credit card order, call toll-free at 877-TUC-TAPE. That's 877-TUC-TAPE. Or send us your $12 check to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141. That's TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. This program was recorded by Jeffrey Blankfort and edited by Mariah Gillardin. TUC Radio's website is www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. My name is Mariah Gillardin. Thank you for listening.